This is Sportsnet Today with Logan Gordon on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
And the Florida Panthers win this first round playoff series. Florida beats Tampa Bay in a postseason series for the first time ever. And they do so in a gentleman's sweep in five games.
Another team ousted in the Stanley Cup playoffs, on Monday night. You heard the call. For the first time ever, the Florida Panthers oust the Tampa Bay Lightning in a playoff series. Well, the Dallas Stars take two in Vegas to send their series back to Dallas, all tied up at two. And Tuesday night could be another elimination-filled night, with four teams leading 3-1 and looking to finish their series off in 5 games apiece. Welcome to Sportsnet Today. Happy Tuesday. Logan Gordon along with you in the Doug Lacey's Basement Systems downtown studios. And remember, if you're mad at that snow, call producer Cam for putting his winter tires off his car 2 weeks ago.
I'm so sorry.
It's all his fault. But we made it to the studio. We survived the slush and the snow. And we're ready to bring you another great program on this Tuesday. For our friends at Doug Lacey's Basement Systems, they're your local experts for basement waterproofing, sump pumps, crawl spaces, foundation repair, and radon mitigation. They're all things basement. Visit dlbasementsystemscalgary.com. Yes, Tampa Bay out. The future of Steven Stamkos. Now, right in the crosshairs in Tampa Bay as they have another round one exit to deal with after so many years of Stanley Cup contention. Has the window closed in Tampa Bay, and what happens with Steven Stamkos? We'll talk about that coming up in just a little bit. We'll also take a look at four potential elimination games on this Tuesday. Toronto, New York, Winnipeg, and Nashville all on the brink of elimination. And we have some potential massive news for the Toronto Maple Leafs ahead of this game with the Boston Bruins. We'll take a look at all of that. We'll chat Leafs Bruins with our pal Elish Forfar a little bit later on in hour two. Later on this hour, we'll go to Seattle and chat with Everett Fitzhugh, the play-by-play voice of the Seattle Kraken. They fired Dave Hakstol on Monday. What's next for Ron Francis? And could it be a coach that's coming to Calgary for a playoff series against the Wranglers that gets the next call up to Seattle? We'll chat with Everett about that and more. Shan's got your Jays report, and it's a busy Tuesday for you. We'd love to hear from you. Fan feedback line open at 960-960. If you want to check in on anything going on around the sports world, feel free to shoot us a text. But yes, kicking things off with the news of the day. The Toronto Maple Leafs and the Boston Bruins will kick things off NHL action on this Tuesday with a 5 o'clock start from Boston. You know the scenario. Bruins up 3-1. Leafs staring elimination in the face once again at the hands of their division rivals, the Boston Bruins. But all the focus on Austin Matthews and his health heading into Game 5 after missing the third period of a Game 4 loss to Boston. He took a brief skate with his team during the morning skate. This is what head coach Sheldon Keefe had to say about his star forward after practice.
Obviously, he was on the ice today, here this morning, so he's working through things to try to make himself available to play. No determination at this time.
And while there's been no determination officially from the team, can tell you that Chris Johnston of The Athletic, along with Jonas Siegel, also Maple Leafs reporter for The Athletic, are reporting just about 15 minutes before the show started. Leafs haven't officially ruled Austin Matthews out of Game 5, but he's unlikely to be healthy enough to play tonight with their season on the line. So despite Sheldon Keefe being, as you would imagine, non-committal about Austin's status, reports out of Toronto already seemingly indicate that the Leafs will not only have to begin the climb back from 3-1, but they'll have to do it without Austin Matthews tonight. And it's going to be tough, as Sheldon Keefe also talked about following morning skate today, this not unprecedented, the hole that they're in. 3-1 has been overcome in the NHL plenty of times, but it has to start with one game, and this might be the toughest one for Toronto.
But it is a nice, fresh reminder that these things happen. You know, teams do come back, and we've been on the other side of one, you know, and these things happen. These things are possible. Well, obviously they're not possible if you don't start with one. So, you know, that's where we're at here tonight.
Yes, the Leafs were down 3-1 or up 3-1 to the Boston Bruins in a fabled series that still stings Toronto fans to this day. Hasn't helped anything yet. And perhaps they can lean on some of that experience. John Tavares, the captain, says the team's staying confident.
Not an ideal spot, but still a great opportunity here for us to just to keep pushing forward, just to keep going. And you know that we just have to be a little better in some areas, and execution has to be really, really good, but to continue to stay with it.
Not ideal, the situation per John Tavares. This feels like an almost insurmountable task for the Toronto Maple Leafs, already struggling to contain the Boston Bruins, unable to get a star performance from Matthews, Marner, Nylander, Tavares, and now potentially without Austin Matthews, one less option to go to in a must-win Game 5 for Toronto. They'll also turn to Joseph Woll in net as he came in for the third period in Game 4 as well. Ilya Samsonov will get the night off. It's going to be a tough one for Toronto. More on this coming up with our pal Elish Forfar in Hour 2. And as Matt and Cochran text in at 960-960, Keith's job lying in the balance. And Matthews, cough, cough, I've got the black lung, coach. Yeah, it's hard to look at this and not feel as though Sheldon Keefe is coaching for his job. And I don't even know, aside from a series comeback, what the Leafs coach could possibly do with a new GM in place, without his buddy Kyle Dubas there. I really don't know what would save his job at this point, seeing as how the Leafs were a round two team last year after getting past the Tampa Bay Lightning. Regression seems almost inevitable at this point for the Leafs, and they spent a couple of assets trying to improve this roster. Obviously, you know, Joel Edmondson came in. Connor Dewar came in. Ilya Labushkin on top of a big contract extension mid-season for William Nylander. Failure just wasn't an option for this group. And we talked to Justin Cuthbert on Monday, who kind of laid it out for us as plain as can be. There just haven't been any positives for the Leafs in this series, and not much to really grasp on when you head into Game 5. We'll see what the Leafs have up their sleeves as they try to stave off elimination once again against the Boston Bruins. Another team on the verge of defeat, it's the Winnipeg Jets. Unfortunately, another Canadian team staring elimination in the face. They've got the Colorado Avalanche for a 7:30 puck drop on Sportsnet West and Hockey Night in Canada. The Jets have not been able to keep the puck out of their net. They are losing the special teams battle badly right now to the Colorado Avalanche, but head coach Rick Bowness says the Jets have no quit in them as they head into Game 5.
This is a big game. You know it. Your players know it. How'd you characterize the vibe that you're getting so far today?
Great. Yep, the guys are good. We just had a really good meeting with them. Talking to the guys a lot this morning. No, they all feel good. Listen, they know our best hockey. We haven't played it yet. They know that. They know we need to play with more discipline so we stay out of the penalty box. They know we need to score some more goals. They understand. But there's not one guy in that room ready to call it a day and call the season over. So I'm very confident that we're gonna see the A game from everybody tonight. There's a great mood in the room. The practice was good, lots of energy. So we just hope that carries into the game tonight.
Just don't have much of a choice but to bring their A game. This Colorado team, one of just five teams in NHL history that have scored five or more goals to open up the NHL playoffs. Four of those five teams would go on to win a Stanley Cup. I should say three of those five. Colorado's not determined yet, but we'll wait and see. Kale McCarr has 8 points in the series. Valanciunas has 6 goals in this series, including a hat trick in game number 4. And Alex Georgiev has out-dueled Connor Hellebuck, who comes into Game 5 rocking the very un-Vezna-like numbers, a 522 goals against and an 870 save percentage, not being helped out by a power play for the Colorado Avalanche that is operating right now at 40% to start the playoffs. The Jets will have to have a big effort, and especially against a Colorado team, as head coach Jared Bednar points out, speaking to the media on Tuesday, has the pedigree to close out teams. They've done it before. They're Stanley Cup champions. Many of those guys still on the team from when they won that championship. That's going to help them close out this series with Winnipeg, says head coach Jared Bednar.
Jared, whenever you get to this point in the series, obviously the questions comes up about closeout games. And how much does your playoff pedigree, what you have gone through as this franchise, and especially in 22, play into a situation like tonight and handling it properly?
I think it helps. Like, you know, learning how to win sometimes can take some time. Experiencing heartbreak helps. I think learning from both successful series and unsuccessful ones, like you kind of figure out what it takes to be able to win and close out series and, you know, survive in advance. And we've had a pretty good mentality in our room when it comes to that, like responding after poor games, keeping things going after good games, like all season long. We talk about things like that. And so they'll draw on their experience, and leadership's been strong in our room. So, I mean, they know the importance of the game. They know that we can expect Winnipeg's best game tonight, and we're going to go try and play our best game of the series as well. The buy-in from our team and the commitment from our team, like, after we lost a couple years in the second round, from day one of training camp in 2022, coming back with a lot of the same group, really the same group, was off the charts. Like, it would have been hard to measure the gain that we got from the commitment standpoint and the focus on what it would take for our team to win in the playoffs based on the previous years. You always think you're a team that can win. We felt that for years. We went through the heartbreak, and something needed to change. And like, structurally, tactically, you know, we'd learned some things as a staff and as a team, but also the biggest change for me was just attitudinal in our locker room and the standard that we were going to set and what we discussed all year long. It had nothing to do with, you know, 82 games of wins and losses. It was a strict focus on what we would need to do to win at the toughest time of the year. And we've kind of kept that going throughout the course of the next couple seasons.
That's Avalanche head coach Jared Bednar ahead of Game 5 for his Colorado Avalanche, looking to book their ticket into round number 2. Of course, they'll face the winner of Vegas and Dallas, which got pushed to at least 6 games thanks to a Dallas win on Monday night in Las Vegas. Jared with, I think, some pretty pointed comments. This is going to be tough for Winnipeg. Same situation, really, as Toronto, in the sense that you're going up against a team that's got a lot of experience doing this. They know how hard the closeout games are. They know that it's important not to let it linger and let that other team pick up momentum. You heard Rick Bowness. Jets haven't played their best hockey yet. I'd agree with that comment. It's hard to disagree with that. I don't think we've seen a great version of Winnipeg yet. Don't let them start playing good hockey when you've got them on the ropes. Don't let them gain any sort of momentum in the Stanley Cup playoffs. In Colorado should be off to round 2. 7:30 puck drop between the Avalanche and the Jets. Also, late game tonight. It's an 8 o'clock start on Sportsnet. Predators down 3-1 in their series to the Vancouver Canucks. They're back in Vancouver for what should be a rowdy atmosphere for Game 5. And unlike the Boston Bruins and the Colorado Avalanche we just talked about with the experience closing out series, that's something Vancouver doesn't have, and it's something that head coach Rick Tocchet talked about Tuesday, following practice for his team, as going to be a key in this series. Closing out the series, always the toughest for teams, according to Tocchet.
That's the way you got to look at it for our end. And your mindset's got to be the same. I don't think we have to be so desperate that you know, like, oh my God, if we don't win, we got to travel back. I don't think you think that way. I think you just think that we have to get to our game. We know what we have to do better for today's game. That's really what it comes down to.
Vancouver with the big, of course, upset victory in overtime in Game 4 in Nashville. Elias Lindholm, the former Flame, with the OT winner. Colton Sisson's probably still having nightmares of that missed empty netter late in the game to close it out. Nashville now on the brink of elimination. Arthur Shilovs going to start in. Can't get that one right. Shilovs going to get the start in goal for Vancouver once again with Casey DeSmith still dealing with a bit of an injury, and obviously Thatcher Demko out for at least this series and maybe the next one for Vancouver. So after picking up a win in Game 4, back to Shilovs for Vancouver as they look to close out the Nashville Predators. And, of course, the final elimination, potential elimination game on this Tuesday night. It's the 5:30 start in Carolina. Hurricanes and the New York Islanders. They can set up a round two matchup with the Rangers if they're able to close out New York tonight. It was, of course, a big double OT victory in Game 4 for the Islanders as they followed off elimination for at least one game. Sure feels like an inevitability, unfortunately, for New York as they head into Carolina. It's going to be a very tough atmosphere. Freddie Anderson has been great. He's got a 2.07 goals against. Freddie Anderson with that .920 save percentage as well. They'll look to put away the New York Islanders in five games. Could see four elimination games tonight, Shane, including a couple of Canadian teams. We'll have to wait one more night. It's an extra night between the Oilers and the LA Kings. Of course, they're part of two games on Wednesday.
Four elimination games. I really can't expect. I don't think I'm going to see a lot of teams getting eliminated tonight. I do think Jets got a good shot. Who knows what happens with Arthur Shilovs? I mean, he looked great in the last win, but getting a start again, that's your third string guy. So that's a wild card there. And then, I mean, I think the Leafs are a disaster. I'm giving the Bruins like a 90% chance of winning this series tonight. It's just, there's way too much going on, off the ice. This Leafs team is probably the biggest disaster that we've seen all year.
With the exception of Winnipeg, who's hosting Colorado, the potential eliminating team all at home tonight as well. So Toronto's in Boston. Islanders are in Carolina, and the Preds have to travel to Vancouver. So Colorado, the only lesser seed right now that has to go on the road. Not that it's bothered them. They've had plenty of success in Winnipeg. Again, Leafs, Bruins, 5 o'clock, 5:30. Got Islanders, Hurricanes, 7:30, Avalanche, Jets, 8 o'clock, Predators, and the Canucks. That's on your Tuesday slate of games. Of course, Monday, we talked about the Lightning and the Panthers. Heard that clip coming in as the Panthers dominate the Tampa Bay Lightning. We'll save the Steven Stamkos conversation for a little bit later because that's all anyone could focus on last night. And John Cooper, Steven Stamkos weren't big on big picture conversations following that loss to Florida, but we'll dive into that conversation a little bit more later on. Did want to focus in a bit more on the Stars and the Golden Knights. How about the comeback for Dallas? An absolute slugfest between the Stars and the Golden Knights in Game 4. Just that series of hits that you saw. McNabb levels Logan Stankoven, gets the puck, and 2 seconds later, Jimmy Benn is running him over. The Vegas Golden Knights outhit Dallas 41-17, but Dallas picks up the win where it matters. Dadonov, Wyatt Johnston, Ty Dellandrea, and Rupe Hintz all score, including a dominant second period for the Dallas Stars, which saw them outshoot Vegas 16-7 and take the eventual 3-2 lead, which would win the game for them. That is where Jonathan Marchessault of the Vegas Golden Knights saw this one going wrong for his team.
I think we lost the momentum a little bit in the second period. They got the power play goal, and after that they generated another power play, and they were able to get a goal in the last 2 minutes. So I think that's an unfortunate bounce, but I mean, it's momentum swings in the playoff, and I don't think we managed that well today.
Potentially the only series right now that seems like it's got the ability to go 6 or 7 games, and Dallas goaltender Jake Oettinger credits that right now to the fact that his team didn't panic after going down 2-0 in the series with 2 home losses in Dallas.
That's not surprising, I think, to anyone in this room. I think, you know, we felt good about our game in Dallas. Just, you know, didn't go the way we wanted to. And, you know, series go a million different ways, right? You know, it's not always how you draw it up. And teams have come back from down 3-0, 3-1.
Won't have to do that in this series. It was one of the ones we expected to go long, Shannon. It sure looks like this has 7 games written all over it. As the road team takes 2 games to start off this series, and now it's the only one tied at 2 as we get into the later stages of round 1. What a comeback from the Dallas Stars.
Yeah, that's huge. But we saw the first game, not Jake Oettinger's best game by any means. And then game 2, he stepped up. I'd say the team didn't. So it looked scary for Dallas, but we know how talented they are, how ridiculous they are. And I'm starting to see how important that addition of Chris Tanev is with Dallas. We all knew it was going to be big. Chris Tanev fits on all 32 teams in the NHL and helps all 32 teams. But what he provides for Dallas and the amount of ice time he's getting as well, this Dallas team looks scary. And truthfully, it sucks that we're seeing this in round 1, because I do think this should be the Western Conference final matchup. And it should be a rematch of last year. I really do hope this goes 7. And what I saw yesterday was 2 of the best teams in the West going at it.
More on the NHL playoffs as the show continues. We did want to mention as well the Calder Trophy finalists released by the NHL. No surprises here. Congratulations to Connor Bedard, Brock Faber, and Luke Hughes. They have been named the 3 finalists for the most proficient player in their first year of competition. This one voted on by members of the Professional Hockey Writers Association. Of course, Connor Bedard of the Chicago Blackhawks led or co-led both rookies and the Blackhawks in goals with 22 points with 61 on the season, despite missing 14 games due to injury. Brock Faber, a rock on the back end for the Minnesota Wild. He was actually a selection by the Kings in the 2020 draft, but he finished 3rd among rookies with 47 points, skating in 82 contests, and averaged 24 minutes and 58 seconds in his rookie season. And of course, Luke Hughes, the brother of Quinn and Jack, he was 2nd amongst rookies. He also had 47 points in 82 games. That was 2nd most by a rookie defenseman in New Jersey Devils history. His role increased with the injury to Dougie Hamilton this season. Did not play quite as much as Faber did on a nightly basis, but still an impressive rookie season for Luke Hughes in New Jersey, following in the footsteps of both of his brothers who have been successful NHLers. Of course, the NHL awards come in later on this year, but we'll continue to let you know the awards finalists. So Bedard, Faber, and Hughes. This has got to be Bedard, right?
It should be. Well, I think it will be based on name, but what Brock Faber did this year was very special. And what stood out to me is that the injury to Jared Spurgeon, I said, and I know that a lot of people also said, while they're done, that's their captain, that's their number one defenseman. Brock Faber stepped up as a 21-year-old. He had 47 points in his first season. And I mean, another cool story. He's a Minnesota guy. I don't know if you've seen the picture of him at a Wild game banging on the glass when he was a fan of the team. It's a pretty cool story, but if Bedard didn't get injured, I'd say 100% should be Bedard. But it's hard not to consider Brock Faber as the winner this year with how important he was and how many minutes he played.
Well, we'll take a break. Come back on the other side. We broke the news on Monday, or talked about the news on Monday, about Dave Hakstol being fired in Seattle. They'll now look for their 2nd head coach in franchise history and look to turn around a team that made the playoffs in year 2 but missed the mark badly in year 3 of their existence. Everett Fitzhugh, the play-by-play voice of the Seattle Kraken, is going to join us next to talk all things Seattle Kraken. But right now, time for a Jays report with Shan Verge.
Time now for the Jays report on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Here's Shan Verge.
Oh my God! Okay, it's happening! Everybody stay calm.
What's the procedure, everyone? What's the procedure?
Stay calm!
Wait.
Everybody calm down!
It finally happened. The day has come. The Toronto Blue Jays scored 6 runs in a game. It was a fun night last night at Rogers Centre on Danny Jansen giveaway night.
thousands of fans and players sporting the famous goggles, making it a big day for the glasses-wearing community. A fun day, but not a fun start for the Blue Jays with Yariel Rodriguez on the mound. Nelson Velasquez brought Bobby Witt Jr. home with a double in the first, followed by a Michael Massey RBI single for a 2-0 lead. Looking to build off a win over the Dodgers, the Jays needed a bat to step up and get the offense going, and it was green light for Red Turn.
Bolin checks over at first and delivers. And Turner gets under that one, sends it to left field, and that one is gone. Justin Turner has tied this ball game as he took that one over the wall in left field. It was curving towards the pole, but no doubt about that one. And Turner gets under another one, sends it to left field, and it's out of here. Justin Turner, for the second time in this ball game, in as many at-bats, launches one to a similar spot, and he gives Toronto the 3-2 lead.
His third and fourth homer of the year gives the Jays the lead, and in the bottom of the third, Danny Jansen made the glasses-wearing community proud.
Make it a double play by scoring even more air miles. When you purchase with your Timbermark credit card, you can't purchase this one. It's a home run for Danny Jansen. He rocked that one to left center, and Jansen, with 15,000 of his number nines raining down at Rogers Center, gives Toronto a 4-2 lead.
Now, this game stayed tight. The Jays and the Royals traded a couple of runs in the bottom of the sixth, where Addison Barger picked up his first MLB hit with a single to right, and it was a big one, too. Vladimir Guerrero Jr. hammered a double to left, and Barger put on the Jets to extend the lead to 6-4. That lead held until the eighth, where Freddie Freeman, no relation to Freddie Freeman, hit a solo shot to left off Eric Swanson. It got scary in the ninth for the Jays as well, with Nate Pearson on the mound. Runners ended up getting on the corners. But Pearson caught Michael Massey with a wicked curveball to end the ballgame. Yariel Rodriguez got through 3 2/3 innings with 6 hits, 2 earned runs, and just 1 strikeout. Yennesis Cabrera picked up the win, and Nate Pearson got the save. The Jays move back even on the season with a 15-15 record, and the win streak is at a whopping 2 games. And Game 2 gets going tonight with first pitch at 5:07 p.m. Cole Ragans versus Jose Berríos is your pitching matchup tonight, and we won't have this one on the 960 airwaves with a Stanley Cup playoff doubleheader, but you can listen on the Sportsnet app. Enjoy the game tonight. I'm Shan Vergy, and that was your Jays Report.
Catch the Blue Jays all season long, right here on Calgary's home of the Blue Jays, Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Continuing to get you set for a busy 4-game schedule in the NHL playoffs on this Tuesday. 4 potential elimination games to get to. We'll continue that conversation on the ice, but Monday, news off the ice in Seattle that the Kraken were moving on from head coach Dave Hakstol after 3 seasons behind the bench in Seattle. The first coach in franchise history is out. The Kraken missed the playoffs this season after being a 100-point team and going to the second round in just their second season in Seattle. Now searching for the next head coach to take them to the next level. What's next for Seattle? Whenever we chat about the Seattle Kraken, only one person we love bringing on the program. We go down the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline to welcome in the voice of the Seattle Kraken. Everett Fitzhugh joins us this afternoon. Everett, thanks for the time as always, man. How you doing?
Oh, Logan, great to talk to you again, my friend. How are we today?
We got a massive dump of snow here in Calgary, so we're 50-50 on this Tuesday, but we're doing all right, pal.
I tell you what, I remember going up in Detroit, and usually early April, mid-April, always around opening day for the Tigers baseball season, we always got one last good 8-inch snowfall and one last good week of about 30-degree Fahrenheit weather. So you're singing my language of back home right now.
You get it. You understand what we're going through here. Look, didn't expect to have some Seattle news to talk about so quickly, but we did yesterday. I mentioned Dave Hakstol out as head coach of the Seattle Kraken. Just give me your initial surprise level, I guess, reaction when you heard the news on Monday.
Yeah, I think it was a little bit of surprise. I think it was a little bit, maybe we saw this coming. I mean, if you listen to and read the tea leaves over the last month of the season, a lot has been hinted to this team's need to get better in a lot of areas. And you pay attention to all the buzzwords, right? Big changes coming this offseason, roster overhaul, you know, needing to do things differently. A lot of those conversations were had in the media, privately, publicly as well. So I think that, you know, for Dave Hackstall, who didn't yet have his two-year extension commence, it doesn't even start until the new league year on July 1, to have him let go after 3 years, I think that was a bit of a shock to some people. But listening to Ron Francis' press conference, I should say, yesterday, you heard what he was saying about there were too many losing streaks this season, you know, even though there were a lot of injuries, the inconsistencies were just too much to overlook, and ultimately that's why this decision was made.
What changed from the season ago where this team was in the second round of the playoffs and a 100-point team to this year in your mind, Everett?
I mean, I think for me it's simple. It was the lack of offense. I mean, last year the Seattle Kraken were fifth in the NHL 5-on-5 in goals for, third in the NHL overall in goals for. I think also you couple that with the fact that you lost 101 points on your fourth line offensive production coming into the year. Last year you had 13 players coming off of career high years in either goals, assists, or points. I mean, this team was scoring. You know, they were able to outscore their problems. You look at this year defensively, this Kraken team is the only team in the top 10 in defense at just over 2.5 goals against per game to not make the playoffs this season. But unfortunately, your goals for is about 2.3, 2.4. So you're not scoring as much as you need to. I think that was the biggest issue. You also had 2 8-game losing streaks this season, 2 6-0 stretches for the Kraken. And then I think some of those losses were just bad losses. Ron Francis said yesterday that he took stock of the entire season and he looked over the entire 82-game body of work. And looking at that, you had a couple of losses to San Jose in there. You got swept by Chicago, swept by Montreal, rather. You lost to Chicago. You lost against Ottawa. The Chicago and Ottawa game, both those goaltenders at the time the Kraken played them, statistically had the lowest save percentage in the NHL. So there were just a lot of inconsistent moments for Seattle this season. And like I said before, I think it was just too much to overcome in the management's eyes.
Elliot Friedman, Jeff Merrick, a couple of Sportsnet colleagues have, as we always do when a coach gets fired, you start to look ahead to what might be next. A name that's been thrown around by them, obviously Dan Bylsma in the organization, coaching the Coachella Valley Firebirds, who will be here in Calgary for the series against the Wranglers. Got NHL experience as a Stanley Cup winner. His name's been thrown around as a possible replacement. Does that sound like a good fit to you, or as a possibility at least for Seattle to replace Dave Hackstall?
You know, I think it is for a variety of reasons, and a couple of them you just mentioned. He's got extensive NHL experience. He's got, I want to say, 320-some-odd wins up against 160 or so losses. I mean, he's won a lot more than he's lost. He has his Stanley Cup. Players enjoy playing for him this year when a few of the young players from Coachella Valley got called up. You asked them about their experience down there, how everything's going, you know, what's your first year of pro hockey like? And a lot of them, you know, they lead off with, oh, the staff is great. Disco Dan, as they call him, is a great coach. He's a great communicator. He's a good leader. I think we saw that in the NHL as well. So I do think that's it's a really good fit. Now, depending on who you ask, there has been a little bit of talk about would he want to come back to the NHL. I do know that he's having success down at Coachella Valley. There are some folks that I've heard say that he enjoys it down there. The pressure isn't as much as it is up here at the NHL level. He's got his cup. It's not a money thing, so maybe he just enjoys his time. And also, too, listen, there are worse places to be in the hockey world than Palm Desert, California. So I wonder if that's a part of it, but I have to imagine that his name, because of the familiarity with the organization, because the fact that both Coachella and Seattle, they run a lot of the same systems, a lot of the same, culture is very similar. It would be a pretty seamless transition for him. So I would have to imagine his name has got to be at or near the top of Ron Francis' list.
Do you think this move is the sign of an important offseason for Ron Francis and the fact that maybe we see some bigger time moves from him as he tries to get the organization to the next step?
I think it is. I think it is. This is we're only 3 years in, but we're already talking about the biggest offseason for the Seattle Kraken, potentially, for the first decade of the team. And I'll tell you why. I mean, obviously this team made the playoffs last season. And in my opinion, I think that once you overachieve, once you hit a certain mark, the goalposts are allowed to move. You're a brand new expansion team. A lot of folks didn't expect the Kraken to finish 500, let alone beat the defending Stanley Cup champion and almost beat Dallas in the second round. So I think when you have that type of success, the goalposts are allowed to move. I think playoffs are allowed to become the new normal. And then also here locally, a lot of attention being paid to potentially the NBA coming back to Seattle. That's another tenant in the building. That's another big sport, another team that's going to potentially take dollars out of the market from your fan base, from your merchandising, or whatever the case may be. So when those Sonics come back in the next 3-4 years, whenever they do, mm-hmm. you don't want to be a team that's still hovering around 500. You want to be, you want to have made another playoff run. You want to have maybe gone to a final in the next 3 to 4 years. Obviously, a lot has to happen, but you want to set yourself up for success. And I think the fact that there isn't that bona fide top six scoring threat on this team, that's a big part of it. I think you want to continue to make those inroads within the community and with the media. So this is going to be a big offseason, but I think the work that the Kraken do, that Ron Francis and his team do this summer over the next 4 to 6 months, that I think will dictate a lot of where this team goes for the next 2, 3, 4 years plus.
Is there a feel in Seattle from people that you talk to or fans, Everett, that there's a pressure to succeed sooner rather than later for Seattle because of what Vegas was able to do? Or is the, I guess, even as you mentioned, is the goal mark different? Is the timeline different for a Seattle team that had it a little different than Vegas when they came in?
That was one of our biggest sayings, our biggest talking points when this team first, came into the league. We were not going to be Vegas. We are not going to be Vegas. I think we all despise Vegas because Vegas has really, they've ruined it for every expansion team moving forward for the rest of time in any sport. That being said, I do think that there is always going to be the comparison to Vegas. Vegas won a cup in, their sixth season? They've made the playoffs all but 1 year in the NHL. Regardless of what you say, we're not going to be Vegas. We're not going to be Vegas. You're always going to have those comparisons. And I think that while that might not be the number one reason, I do think that there is a bit of a factor, not internally, but I do think externally. I think from the fan base, I think from some of those folks who are new to the NHL, learning how this sport works. And again, you're in a town where the NFL reigns king, right? You don't have to wait 2, 3, 4, 5 years for these draft picks to pan out. These players are coming in day one potentially and contributing to playoff success and much more. So I do think trying to educate fans and telling fans that, you sign a number one overall pick, and unless you're looking at a Connor Bedard or a Macklin Celebrini, it's going to take a while. I remember when Matt Coronato was playing junior hockey, and he was a really good junior hockey player, but we're still waiting to see him get to the player Calgary knows he can be. And it's been 2 years since his draft, 3 years, something like that, since his draft. So Yeah, so trying to tell fans, hey, listen, it's a process. It's a marathon, not a sprint. You know, that's all well and good, but I do think that there is a little bit of that impatience. Well, Vegas did it. Why can't we?
Everett Fitzhugh's along with us. He's the voice of the Seattle Kraken. We're talking all things Seattle following their firing of head coach Dave Hakstol on Monday. Everett, as far as the roster stands now, what's the biggest priority for Ron Francis as we head into the offseason, other than hiring a head coach, obviously?
Everyone's going to have the exact same answer. You are going to need a bona fide top six scoring forward. And, you know, I think a lot of folks will say you need a number one centerman, but in this league, how many true number one centermen do we have? We have Matthews, we have McDavid, we have McKinnon. Right.
Yep.
So maybe a number one center probably might be a bit of a stretch, but I'm going to say a bona fide top six scoring forward. You do need help down the middle, but this team needs a consistent 20 to 25 goals, 30 goals every single year. They need a consistent 40 to 50 assists every single year. Someone that can win faceoffs for you. Like I said, this team has a really good supporting core. They have a really good, you know, group of McCann, Eberle, Tolvanen has played really well. Bjorkstrand's been able to put together back-to-back 20-goal seasons. So you have a number of players who can score, but you need that one catalyst. And I don't think this team has that catalyst. Like I said, you're 29th in the league in scoring this season. You have to find someone, or maybe a pair of players. You're going to have the money to play with, but you're going to need to find somebody that's going to be that top six player for you. And when I say top six, I mean a player that you can look at 25 other rosters in the NHL and say, this person, no doubt, will fit into their top six forward group. You're probably not going to crack Edmonton's top six. You're probably not going to crack a couple of other teams' top six, you know, Colorado rather, maybe Toronto, but you need to say, yep, on more than two-thirds of the league, this player is going to be in a top six forward group.
To that point about going out and getting one of those guys, if there isn't an option that Ron Francis likes in free agency, is there a scenario in your mind, and this might be getting too far ahead of ourselves, but I'm curious about it or not, with a top 10 pick like Seattle owns pre-draft lottery, is that something you could see maybe Ron Francis dangling if the right situation came up, or are they, you know, pretty content to add to the stockpile of prospects they already have?
You know, he actually alluded to something similar to that in his end of the season media avail last week. He was asked if the time is right to start maybe parting ways with a prospect or two, some highly coveted prospects. This team has a lot of draft capital this year, as they have had over their first 3 years. And he was pretty quick to say, if the right move is there, all options are on the table. And Mike, and you're right. I mean, I know this draft after Celebrini, after number 2-3, probably isn't the deepest draft that we've seen in quite some time, but a top 10 pick is a top 10 pick. And if there's a player out there that the Kraken feel can help them on the trade market, I don't see why you wouldn't potentially throw in that number one pick that first round pick, I should say. But I don't see anything that would lead me to believe that nothing's off the table for Ron. I think he went into this summer because of the lack of success. I think everything is on the table. Current rostered players, players in the system, players that aren't in the system in terms of picks, obviously. I do think every option's on the table, save a handful of untouchables organizationally. It wouldn't surprise me to see a couple of bold moves in some capacity being made this summer.
Last one for you. We always get to this point off of entry-level contracts. Come July, Matty Beniers will be able to sign an extension. Has there been a thought process about trying to get the young man signed long-term in Seattle? Do you think that's something Ron Francis will pursue?
I think he will. And again, back to that, his exit interview, if you will, last Monday, he said as much. Both him and Ellie Tolvanen are both restricted free agents, and Ron does see those two pieces as very vital parts of the organization for years to come. So, you know, everything that I've seen, Matty Beniers wants to be in Seattle, like a lot of players who are in that locker room. He wants to win here. He wants to have success here. Obviously, you know, the money has to be right. But for a young player who is coming off of a sophomore slump, if you will, I know that he's got a bit to prove. I think he's going to be spitting a little bit of vinegar coming out here in training camp in September, wanting to get back to his rookie year form. So I do think that there is, you know, a want, obviously, from the Kraken side, but I think from his side too. Matty wants to be here long term. He wants to win here. You know, the team's first ever draft pick. You know, he wants to etch his name into Kraken lore as one of the top players in this franchise's early on history. So I do think there's going to be some work done there. Everything that Ron says and from what we've heard and understand, it sounds like it shouldn't be too difficult to get him under contract. And he said he's very confident that something is going to get done that both parties will like. So obviously that's going to be, you know, a lot of cliche and well, duh, but I think it shouldn't be an issue getting Matty signed to a decently long-term deal here this summer.
Everett, you're the best, man. Always appreciate you hopping on. Love our chats. All things Kraken, as always, my man. Enjoy the off season. We'll ring your phone if we get some Seattle news to talk about in the next couple months. But enjoy some time off, my man.
Hey, man, you as well. Enjoy that last big snowfall of the year. Go grab the sled, grab some skis, and have some fun.
We'll do, buddy. Take care, hey?
All right, we'll see you.
See you now. Everett Fitzhugh, the play-by-play voice of the Seattle Kraken, joining us this afternoon down the Atlas Peach and Sports Bar guest hotline. If you missed it, check out the 32 Thoughts podcast with Jeff Merrick and Elliot Friedman. It's going to drop on Wednesday. Elliot and Jeff talked on the Merrick Show a little earlier on this Tuesday, and Dan Bylsma's name really circulating around this Seattle team right now. It's an in-house option. He, like I mentioned, he's going to be in Calgary with the Coachella Valley Firebirds. Seattle's AHL affiliate as they take on the Calgary Wranglers. But you listen to Jeff and you listen to Elliot, sure feels like Seattle pretty comfortable going to a guy in-house that already has Stanley Cup experience, NHL experience with the Pittsburgh Penguins, and could make the transition with a lot of knowledge of the Seattle system by simply coming up from the American Hockey League and obviously getting a pay raise back into the NHL. We'll see if that's the final scenario. We'll expect Ron Francis to do his due diligence and take a look around, but the ready-made option for the Seattle Kraken might already be in their organization coaching Coachella Valley right now, and we'll see if it is, in fact, a return to the NHL for Dan Bylsma. We'll take a break, come back on the other side. We'll chat all things playoffs with our pal Ailish Forfar. Four elimination games on Tuesday, including, of course, the Toronto Maple Leafs. Disaster scenario with Austin Matthews potentially unavailable for Game 5. We'll ask Ailish about that and more when Hour 2 kicks off next here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.